Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Yeah, good day, America. President Trump says we're entering a new golden age. I hope that's true, especially since we're talking about pirate money returning America state by state to constitutional and biblical money where you can transact with gold and silver. If you don't know what I'm talking about and want to learn more, visit piratemoneybook.com, also transactionalgold.com. Now, I'm not selling gold, by the way. This is an idea given to us by our founders in the Constitution, and half of the states of the United States of America are taking it seriously, looking at it in their legislation. We're visiting state legislatures across the country, 24 states. In fact, I leave this week to testify in Florida, and our team has been in Utah, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, Tennessee, and 24 states across America. If you want to learn more, visit transactionalgold.com or read the book I wrote called Pirate Money, and you can learn more about that at piratemoneybook.com. Now, I wrote this book to promote liberty, security, and values, and in this quest, I'm pleased to meet so many American thought leaders, and all they're doing extraordinary work in so many important things. And one of the most important works being done is done by a dear family friend, an amazing lady, Reggie Littlejohn, who is our guest host on Pirate Money Radio. She's a Yale-trained attorney who served 8 years helping victims in San Francisco. She's the founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers, the co-founder of the Sovereignty Coalition, and the founder and head of Anti-Globalist International. And I'm told she's not very popular with the Chinese Communist Party, which is a badge of honor and courage. Welcome, Reggie, to Pirate Money Radio.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I heard something. We listened to you at First Baptist Dallas. You gave a great talk. People loved it. They were scared by it, but they're thankful that you're leading the fight against some of this globalism and things. Is it true that you're the number two least liked person from the Chinese Communist Party?
Well, the way that it was put to me, my husband and I went to church in Florida a couple of years ago, and there was a Chinese man, very tall, who came up to me and said, "Are you Reggie Littlejohn?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "I work in the intelligence community, and I want you to know that you are the second most hated person in the world by the Chinese Communist Party," which I was shocked. But like you said, I think it is a badge of honor. The number one most hated, he told me, was Chen Guanchen, who's I actually spearheaded the international initiative to free him. He was exposing forced abortion in China from Chinese soil, and they hated that.
Well, Reggie, you're doing God's work. Absolutely. I mean, it says in James 1:27, pure and undefiled religion before the God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their tribulation and to keep oneself unstained from the world. Saving babies, protecting women from the real war on women. What motivates you to do what you do? And then we'll get into the specifics, but why do you do it?
Well, first of all, as an attorney, I represented two Chinese refugees in their cases for political asylum in the United States. And one of them was forcibly sterilized, meaning she had had two kids, so she violated the one child policy. So they literally picked her up and dragged her out of her home and held her screaming and crying and pleading and performed a tubal ligation on her, which is abdominal surgery without anesthesia. And she got a massive infection and then had chronic migraines, back pain, and abdominal pain from that moment to the point that I represented her. So I think she was permanently disabled by all of that.
Now, was this a shock to you when you met her that this was going on somewhere in the civilized world of ours?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, okay, so at the time, China was promoting its propaganda, which was that the one-child policy was voluntary. And I knew China had a one-child policy, but like most people, I had never really stopped to think about how it was enforced. And when I met my client, that's how I realized that this entire narrative was a total lie and that it was enforced through forced abortion, forced sterilization, and even infanticide, the killing of full-term babies after they're born. So I left the practice of law and founded Women's Rights Without Frontiers because I didn't know of anybody else who was actually dealing with this issue. And this issue is a huge issue. China is one-fifth of the population of the world, and therefore one-fifth of the women in the world at that time were living under this murderous womb police regime.
You know, we hear the term reproductive rights, and China violates that entirely. I know it's abused here in the West, the whole terminology, But this notion, you think about it, number one, China then is reducing their population by half over a generation. Because if you can only have one child, I know they had to change that policy because they watched the demographics plummet. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out if two people produce one and that's the next generation and not everybody has babies, then you're essentially cutting your population by half or more.
Well, right. And their demographers were telling them, pleading with them to stop this, but they continued it. Why? Okay, they continued it, in my opinion, because the womb police in China function as domestic terrorists. They could do anything. They aborted full-term babies 9 months, and these operations were so violent that the women themselves would die. That if a woman missed her monthly or quarterly cervical checkup, they could drag her out and beat her with hoses and.
Wait, what? Missed her what?
Cervical checkup. So okay, there's enforcement. This is totally intrusive. All right. So in the factories at that time, they had people in the bathrooms so that women would have to prove every month that they were menstruating. All right. So that was a monthly thing. And then on top of that, they had quarterly cervical checkups where you'd have to go into a doctor and they would make sure that you were not pregnant. And if you were pregnant, you would not be able to leave the doctor's office until you'd had an abortion. And they also had, everybody was spying on everybody else so that a woman could be ratted out for being pregnant by her family, her friends, her coworkers, and even just, they had spies that would sit in the village squares and just look at women's abdomens as people walked by. And if somebody looked pregnant, they would stop her. And if she did not have her birth permit on her at the time, she'd be dragged off for a forced abortion.
This is so demonic. I mean, you stop and you think about it, in Judeo-Christian Western civilization culture, you see a woman who's pregnant, it's a celebration.
Right.
Well, congratulations, you're bringing life into this world and motherhood is celebrated and so forth. Here they're literally monitoring every aspect of a woman's life. I mean, this is a war on women. You said that last night.
That's
this
right.
is the real
this
war
This is the
on women.
Real war on women. And so the reason I think that they kept the policy, even though they knew that they were heading into a demographic disaster, is because it was the Chinese Communist Party knows that it's not legitimate. They were never elected. They took over. And so the only way that they can rule is through terror. And so they were able to terrorize the entire population because the one-child policy touched everyone. And that's why they never got rid of it. And that's why they still have not gotten rid of coercive population control to this day. So they moved from a one-child policy to a two-child policy to a three-child policy. They are in desperate need of babies right now. Why don't they just get rid of the three-child policy? Why don't they get rid of all coercive population control? In my opinion, it's because they want to have the right to forcibly abort women in order to keep the population under a reign of terror. Under the three-child policy, the rule is every married couple is allowed to have three children. What that means is that if you're not married, you're not allowed to have kids. So single mothers are at risk for forced abortion and fourth children are at risk for forced abortion. And that's why I think that they keep the policy. Plus, I think that they are selectively using it against disfavored minorities such as the Tibetan Uyghurs the Tibetans and the Uyghurs from Xinjiang. So that's why I think they keep it.
Well, when did you start, by the way, in this? What year would that have been?
Well, I mean, I was representing the refugees in the mid-90s, and then I founded Women's Rights Without Frontiers around 2009, but I was working on the issue between.
The first I ever heard of this was on a Murphy Brown episode, where Murphy Brown, you remember Candace, what was her name, who played Candace Bergen, who played Murphy Brown. She actually did not know what to do with this because she was pro-abortion, and yet she found forced abortions, particularly sex selection abortions, which is something we have not gotten into, that is a horror that has developed in China. And we're going to have to take a break. But when we come back, I want to talk about the implications of the one-child, two-child, three-child forced abortion policy of the Chinese Communist Party, because this is destroying women around the world. This is a terrible thing happening, and Reggie Littlejohn is our hero fighting it. We'll be back right after the break with more Reggie Littlejohn.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
And we're talking with one of my personal heroes, Reggie Littlejohn, who's fighting for the principles of truth and true religion, undefiled religion, which is protecting babies and serving widows, which is what she's doing here. And we talked about the one-child, two-child, three-child policy in China, which they're panicking because the Chinese population is plummeting, and they're in a death spiral from a political and economic standpoint. And all this relates to money at one level or another. But one of the implications is apparently there's sex selection abortion. We were talking about Murphy Brown didn't know what to do with this. You know, she was a liberal activist television character played by Candace Bergen, who was a news reporter, and she was presented with abortion. Oh, of course, every woman has a right to have an abortion. What about a forced abortion, and it's happening because the woman is pregnant with a female?
So here's the thing. I named my organization Women's Rights Without Frontiers because I had thought that the women's rights community, the people who stand up for so-called reproductive rights, would be against forced abortion because it's not a choice. Okay, they say, well, we're pro-choice. Well, forced abortion is not a choice. And they say they're pro-woman. Well, obviously, you would be against the sex selective abortion of infant women, right? No, absolutely not. And I have found that the pro-life community has completely embraced my work, and the so-called pro-choice community has ignored my work. I mean, they can't come out against me because they know that what I say is true, but they've just ignored it. They've offered no support whatsoever. And I believe that that is because they are that the leadership of the so-called pro-choice community is actually pro-abortion, and ultimately pro-population control. They don't care if the abortion is forced. They don't care if the abortion is selectively just because the baby is female. If it's an abortion, if it reduces the population, it's good as far as they're concerned. That's the only way I can think
of. Well, they also seem to have a racial component. At least Margaret Sanger did in Planned Parenthood. It's, you know, well, we need to reduce. They only wanted to allow select people. Particularly, you know, white people, especially in the whole notion of Planned Parenthood and the eugenics movement in Nazi Germany and so forth. So the implications are huge for China. Did I hear correctly? You said last night, 133 boys for every 100 girls?
So this is what's happening under the three-child policy. You know, people had assumed that if you loosen things up, if you have go from a one-child to a two-child or two-child to a three-child, then more girls will be born. Because under the one-child policy, a lot of couples decided that if they're only going to have one child, they wanted it to be a boy. Well, what happened is China hammered it into people's minds so thoroughly that one child is best. And also, it's very expensive to raise a child in China. Most people want to have as few children as possible, but they want to have a boy. So if their first child is a girl, then they will then try for a boy in the second child. And I mentioned at the talk last night that when the two-child policy came up, there was a couple that had a girl for their first child under the one-child policy. They thought they were one and done. And then they moved to a two-child policy. And the husband said, hey, let's have another kid. Let's have a boy. And he forced his wife to abort four baby girls in 1 year. And then she died. So zoom forward to now, the Congressional Executive Commission on China released a report in late 2024 that concluded a statistic that for third children, there are 133 boys born for every 100 girls born. So I don't know how many thousands or millions of girls are being slaughtered in China today because they were going to be third children. But that's the statistic, and it's horrific.
Well, it's a cultural thing. Here, you gave a quote last night and explain this. It's a Chinese phrase, to raise a daughter is to water someone else's garden.
That's right. That's a saying in China, and I believe also in India. And what it means is that traditionally, when a young girl grows up and gets married, she goes to her husband's family. And together, she and her husband support his parents in their old age. So what that means is that all of the love, all of the education, all of the sacrifice that a family would put into raising a daughter is going to go to the parents of her future husband. So that's why, you know, to raise a daughter is to water somebody else's garden. I mean, there's another saying in China is, you know, We don't like daughters, but we love daughters-in-law.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
No, that says it's actually a money thing, an economic thing,
right?
In part, taking care of you. And I'm going to share this. You know, it's a lot. We talk about money here on Pirate Money Radio, and there are really only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, you can spend it, or you can invest it. And at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way to promote liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, it's a mobile phone company. They support the work of the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the economic war room and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. Now, have you had any, you know Patriot Mobile, Glenn and Jenny?
Yeah, I know them. And I am just trying to make time to move over to Patriot Mobile because, I want to do that.
We need to get Patriot Mobile to take a look at your organizations.
I would love that. I would love that. But I've been discussing this with my husband for over a year of wanting to move over to Patriot Mobile.
Yeah. Well, we what I like about them is that they do support a lot of good causes. But, you know, we were talking about sex selection abortion. The reason families do it is because they want someone to care for them in their old age, right? Which helps us think about another problem. Did I hear you say that China has the highest female suicide rate in the world?
Well, it does. But before we move to that, I want to just say a little bit about our Save a Girl campaign. Because we've been saying these terrible things about what's happening with baby girls. And my organization, Women's Rights Without Frontiers, is saving baby girls in China. So we are the only organization in the world that has a network on the ground inside of China of field workers that are able to find these women who are either pregnant with a baby girl who have just given birth to her and to encourage them to be able to keep their daughters. So these are women either who have...
Which is an economic thing.
It's an economic thing. Yeah. Okay. So a lot of the girls that were... In the beginning, we were saving the baby girls from sex selective abortion mostly. And now it's moved more towards... I mean, that still does happen. It's rarer. But on the second daughter and the third daughter in these poor farming families, the mother is getting pressured to give the girl away because the family can't afford more than two kids and they don't want two daughters. So give this one away and we'll try for a son. God forbid it's a third daughter. I mean, the families are considered to be cursed if they have three daughters. That's considered to be a curse. So anyway, so what we do is our field workers who are very strong evangelical Christians will go to the door of the mother and say, congratulations on your baby girl. Girls are as good as boys. And we will give you a stipend of $25 a month for a year. But usually it's more than that. Usually it ends up being 2 or 3 years to empower you to keep your daughter. So then the mother who never wants to get rid of her daughter, I mean, the mothers are completely bonded with their daughters. So these are forced abortions by the family or forced adoptions that the family's pressuring her to give her baby up. So, with that money, number one, it enables them to feed the baby. Because a lot of these women are so stressed out in the countryside, they don't even have the calories to generate milk. That is a big problem where we are. And then, what that means is they have to buy this very expensive milk powder, which they can in no way afford. And so then the solution that's come up with by the husband and the mother-in-law is, why don't you just give her up? We give them that money to enable them to keep their daughters.
I don't want to go too much on a tangent, but when you say give them up, and we know that there is a massive human trafficking globalist organization, when somebody gives their baby up, there are people who will buy babies and they do terrible things with them, particularly girls. So that is a very bad thing to take, force a family to give a baby girl up. But you turned it into, you used the term last night, you made it lucky to have a girl.
She'll go back to her husband and her mother-in-law. So I can't give this baby up or I can't abort this baby. Look, she's a lucky girl. She's already bringing money into the family. So there's a lot of superstition in China around luck. And we use that to save the lives or at least preserve the families of these baby girls.
If people want to learn more how to support that work, they go where?
Okay, go to Women's Rights Without frontiers.org, womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. And as you go there, on the homepage, on the upper right hand of the homepage, it says Save a Baby Girl in China. You just click on that button and you can learn more there.
Okay. And how about the widows? Because we, before we hit the break here, I want to talk about how you're also, you've morphed into also helping widows, because a lot of families, if you don't have any children, who takes care of the women when the husband dies?
Right. So traditional Chinese culture venerated the elderly, and they also had large farming families, so that by the time an original couple would grow old, and they would have a large family that venerated them, that would take care of them. And now, because of the one-child policy, they do not have a family to take care of them, and also they are not venerated. Okay, the elderly under the Chinese Communist Party are considered to be a burden, and that and if you're not producing, you're just, you know.
Okay, now this is important because we're going to talk in the latter segments about useless eaters.
Right, and that's exactly what they would be considered, useless eaters. And so that's why you had mentioned there is that China has an incredibly high senior suicide rate, and in the Chinese countryside, three times the number of women as men kill themselves. So China's like the only country, or one of the few countries in the world, where more women than men kill themselves, and a lot of those are abandoned widows. So we have a Save a Widow campaign where we, the same network that saves babies, we go to the widows and we say, you need help, and so we're going to help you. And they're like, why are you going to help us? And we say, because you're a human being created by God in His image, and you have infinite value. And they have never heard anything like that. So we give them $25 a month, not for a year like the babies. We give them $25 a month for the rest of their lives.
That's amazing. And this is the same group. To support it, you go where?
womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. That's womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. And then on the upper right-hand side of the homepage, it'll say Save a Widow, and you can click on that and learn
this
more.
This is a way to do pure religion. Right here, to be obedient to the passage in James, you can support widows, you can support babies, womensrightswithoutfrontiers.org. They're helping in China, they're helping in Uganda. All right, Reggie, we're going to have to take another break, and after the break, it's going to get even more sinister. What you learned in China is being exported to the rest of the world. You were one of the original whistleblowers about what's coming next, and you don't want to miss this, because when you learn what China has learned and now is exporting to the United Nations, through the World Health Organization, and so forth, it's a big threat to your family. Stay tuned right after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and we have a special guest host, Reggie Littlejohn. She is doing amazing things, saving babies, saving widows, but she's also fighting globalism that's the evil kind, and there is an evil kind, and she's the head of Anti-Globalist International. And I want to start, Reggie, can you describe why it is that, a figure from history, one we don't study as much as we should, you know, is a great Christian hero, Joan of Arc. Tell us why she is one of your personal heroes.
Well, Joan of Arc actually is the patron saint of Anti-Globalist International. And the reason I chose her is that she was a very simple person, not educated, but she became a brilliant military strategist, fierce warrior, fighting for the sovereignty of France, because they were fighting against the English invasion. And so I love the fact that she was young, that she was female, that she was courageous, but also that she was a fierce warrior, but always had her eyes on God. You know, she was a devout Catholic Christian, she actually ended up being burned at the stake, but she never recanted. I mean, she remained absolutely committed to the end. She would not swerve, unswerving. So I think that she's a hero for our times.
Well, if you're talking about globalists and globalism and open borders and so forth, she was protecting the borders of
France. That's right.
She is a model we can look to here. But you've been in China, working in China with Women's Rights Without Frontiers, saving babies and so forth. But you've learned some things that they do. You know, you mentioned it, the womb police, I think is the term that you use. They've learned how to control mass population increasingly with technology. Can you share some of the things that you learned with that and what you saw being applied in COVID with the World Health Organization? This is a whole new worry. I mean, we talk about it here on Pirate Money Radio, but this is a whole new worry for the world, not anything we were thinking about 20 years ago.
Right. So because of having been confronting China since the mid-90s, when COVID hit, I saw that the Chinese method, the Chinese model was being exported to the United States and the world through the World Health Organization and their response to COVID. And there are many, many parallels. One of the things that I could mention is before the digital age, one of the tactics the Chinese Communist Party would use is atomization, isolation and atomization. So what I mean by that is that I mentioned that there's spies, that anyone could spy on you, anybody could rat you out. What that did is it severed the ties of trust that normally bind a society together. You would normally trust your family, your friends, your coworkers, you know, the people in your village. But since all these people were deployed as spies against each other, then that ruptured that trust. And what that does, if you can't trust anybody, you can't organize for democracy. So it just made it so that people could not come together and oppose the atrocities of the government.
This is straight from Nazi Germany, too. I would guess that Mao was watching Hitler and learning at the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, I saw that in COVID, the way everybody was isolated in their own homes. People were, I have a friend whose neighbor ratted her out on Thanksgiving because they had like an extra car. So there were too many people for what they were supposed to have. So they're turning neighbors against each other, turning family members against each other, some, you know, supporting the vaccine, others opposing the vaccine. It was a way of, and then people being alone, quarantined, atomizing society, disempowering everybody. But then the other thing is that China has developed something called the China Social Credit System, which is a way that people are surveilled on every aspect of them. So they have your facial recognition, real-time geolocation, your criminal history, your medical history, your internet search history, your internet spending history, everything about you on your phone. It's an app on the phone so that they would assign you a number which indicates how compliant of a Chinese slave you are. If you are completely compliant, you never make any waves, you never break any laws, you only say what supports, you know, Xi Jinping, then you can have a relatively free life. But as soon as you start standing up for yourself and thinking for yourself, your social credit score is going to plummet. And what happens then is that you can lose your job, your kid will not be able to go to a good school, you will not be able to travel even locally because they will require a good social credit score to even get on the bus. You won't be able to borrow money to buy a home or start a business. You know, it's just, and then if you keep it up, they will sever you from your bank account and your credit card, which if people think that could never happen in North America, it already did happen with the Canadian truckers. And then if you keep it up in China, they'll just disappear you. And I became very alarmed to see the infrastructure of this being set up in the United States and worldwide through these so-called digital vaccine passports, which can serve as the platform for a Chinese-style social credit system.
Well, you know, a couple of things there. First off, you mentioned the loneliness and the isolation. Reminds me of Stella Morabito, who's a friend who wrote the book, Weaponization of Loneliness, which happened during COVID. They mm-hmm. isolated and separated mm-hmm. us. And then also during COVID, there was a Chinese bank run. China has a serious economic problem. They had a bank run. They sent people home by causing their health app to blink red, meaning you can't stay here. Either you're contagious or someone around you is contagious. And so they ordered you to go home. People showed up at the bank, wanted to take their money out and get their money out because this bank was failing. And they stopped the bank run by telling you you're sick or someone around you is sick and you're forced to go into your home and isolate. It is a complete mechanism of control. The social credit scores and everything else is a complete way to control every aspect of life, to isolate you, because isolated people are timid and cowed, and therefore they will not stand up against an oppressive regime. You just hide in your homes. And we saw that happen here. And that had to scare you when you saw people, you know, being isolated. You stand 6 feet apart without science dictating why you stand 6 feet apart. You have to wear masks. When we were told masks don't work, then we were told masks do work, but you need two or three of them. And, you know, I mean, it was just insanity going on. And then this forced, you heard forced abortions. That's something you fought against. Now it is forced health policy, force you to take a vaccine.
Right. And the thing that they were doing is they were fear-mongering. I mean, I'm sure you remember at the beginning of COVID how they described it almost like you would be so afraid of it, like it was Ebola or something, you know? I mean, my husband and I were terrified in the beginning before we saw the truth that we finally ended up getting COVID. And for us, it was like a cold, okay? It was not anything, you know.
And it was absolutely serious for certain people.
For some people.
But, you know, the flu is absolutely serious for certain people. Absolutely. You get a cut on your toe, and for certain people, that'll cause an infection that could lead to death, too. I mean, every disease has a risk factor, and a certain percentage of the population takes it very hard.
Well, I've seen a statistic that the year that COVID hit and so many people died of COVID, the flu deaths went down to like zero. So it looked to me like people who would have died of flu ended up dying of COVID.
Well, this is economics again, because the hospital wasn't paid extra money if you had a flu patient. An influenza patient did not get you extra money. You didn't get extra incubators. You didn't get money to put the remdesivir and all that. The hospitals were paid. It was a part of the congressional package to address COVID. And so they handed you money. So, of course, you're going to diagnose people with COVID. There were people in motorcycle accidents that happened to have COVID, and they didn't distinguish them at one stage in this. They just counted, well, death with COVID. But it was a motorcycle accident. It wasn't COVID, the killing. So yeah, we had a really jacked up health policy there for a while.
Right. So, but my concern is when I saw these vaccine passports coming through, that they serve as the digital platform for the China social credit system coming to the United States, and the pretext for them. And by the way, the World Health Organization is rolling these out worldwide, interoperable, international health IDs. They don't call them vaccine passports anymore. They call them health IDs. But if you go onto the World Economic Forum website, these health IDs look just like what you would need to impose the China social credit system. There's a chart on the World Economic Forum about digital IDs. And what they say is that you will need a digital ID in order to open a bank account, carry online transactions, access healthcare, have insurance, travel, have a social media account, participate in social media, own a communications device like a cell phone or a computer, vote.
Vote. Wait a minute. I'm surprised they put vote in there because it's racist to require an ID to vote. We're told that. But everything else you have to have an ID for. No, it is crazy. It is a means of control. It's something that technology has established that it's not, like you said, it's not just a health passport. It's a digital ID. And now they're actually talking about the real ID with those implications.
So the real ID is the precursor to a national digital ID. And so the real ID is something that we need to oppose because it's going to, it's the final step before having it become all digital. And then that's when we are in the situation where, you know, where we could have a China-style social credit system here. And the thing is, it's not just digital IDs or health IDs. A digital driver's license, any mandatory digital ID can lead to the infrastructure to impose a Chinese style social credit system.
You showed a video for First Baptist where it showed a company that produces this, and a young woman wakes up and everything she does that day requires her ID, it looked like.
Exactly. And so the pitch is, it'll make it so much easier for you to do this. But what they don't tell you is, what if you don't do something you're supposed to do? What if you buck the system? What if
you say the wrong thing on the internet? You happen to be a Judeo-Christian that happens to believe that men shouldn't be in women's sports and things like that. And
right.
You say that, and it runs contrary to the narrative. They cut you off.
They can cut you off. Or if you refuse to be vaccinated, anything that you do, or you give money to the wrong person that's not in power, at that time.
Oh, they said Trump supporters. That's what they said in Canada. If you're a Trump supporter, you lose your bank account. Literally. That was what the Canadian finance minister, Sam Brownback, was debanked. Nick Vujicic was debanked. Nigel Farage was debanked.
Right.
That's happening across the country. But that would be from one single bank. What you're talking about is from the entire system. That you get cut off.
Right. And so it's a way of completely paralyzing a person. Again, it's similar to what happened in China, where with a dissident getting frozen from everybody, and then anybody who tried to help them would also be tarred with the same problem.
All right. We're going to have to take another break. We'll be for our final segment, where we're going to talk about not only the problems, but also maybe some solutions to the complex global shocks they'll bring us.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
And I'm joined with Reggie Littlejohn, who is our guest co-host today. We're talking about a lot of things. We're talking about pure religion and what God expects from us to save widows and orphans in their affliction, to serve them. And she's doing that spectacularly. And she's also fighting this globalist. She's the head of the Anti-Globalist International and co-founder of the Sovereignty Coalition, standing up against China, the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and globalists, including, some in our own nation. I hate to say it, but Bill Gates and others who are doing some globalist things that don't seem like they're very good for us individually. And I want to talk with you, Reggie, about the complex global shock, because this reminds me so much of what we heard from Rahm Emanuel: never let a serious crisis go to waste. And then you have this notion of, well, maybe we should create a serious or define something as a serious global crisis so we can take control. And what if you, and I'm not saying that COVID wasn't a real serious disease. A lot of people, I lost loved ones, everybody did during COVID. But what if they took a non-serious disease, claimed it was a serious disease, and locked us all up in our homes? How would we know differently? Or it doesn't have to be a pandemic. It could be an economic collapse. It could be a bank run on the banks. It could be, it could be a health crisis of any number of ways, which is the World Health Organization almost had a rule in, and I want you to explain that, to where they would have control over state and federal policy if there were something defined as a serious health crisis and we had stayed in the United Nations. That was a big fight you helped, I hope, win with President Trump. Describe that.
Well, there's two things going on here. So President Trump withdrew us from the World Health Organization, and that's tremendous, although it takes a year to actually get out. And the World Health Organization passed international health regulations last year, amendments to them, which required all nations to surveil their citizens, censor them for misinformation and disinformation, which is basically anything that disagrees with what the World Health Organization narrative is at the time, and also to have national health IDs, which are going to be, they are going to be the digital IDs of the World Economic Forum, I believe. So he withdrew us from that. Thank God, thank God. But number one, that needs to be codified into law through legislation, because otherwise the next president could put us right back in. And number two, I'm taking that wonderful thing that President Trump did and bringing it to the world, hoping to get the whole world out of the World Health Organization. So I spoke at the Knesset, the Israeli Knesset, the health committee on last Monday night, a week ago today, and I'm going to be speaking in Kenya to parliamentarians about withdrawing from the World Health Organization. But then there's the United Nations, which is, they passed something called the Pact for the Future last September, And this was, you know, with the full support of the Biden administration. They were pushing for this. And the Biden administration also was the one who were really a major driving force, if not the major driving force, behind these amended international health regulations. But this Pact for the Future that passed contained within it mention of complex global shocks that the United Nations would basically be directing the world, and they would have an emergency platform that would operationalize automatically. And the complex global shocks, you can find a chart on the United Nations website, would include climate change, pandemic, if the grid goes down, if the internet goes down, if the banking system goes down, if supply chains are disrupted, then they have a major event in outer space. Yep. They include that.
Alien invasion or whatever.
and then what they call a black swan event, which is basically anything they didn't think of. And so then if any of those happen and they declare a complex global shock, and then they get to direct the world on how to handle this. And I believe that the United States should withdraw from the United Nations as well.
Yeah, no, that's scary because we have treaties that were party to the United Nations, and judges have ruled at various times that the treaties supersede state laws and state control. And so all of a sudden you wake up, there's something bad that happens anywhere in the world. There's a famine somewhere. They declare it a complex global shock, and then they just demand that every government. I'm hopeful that President Trump wouldn't go along with that nonsense, but we do see governments of the world all lined up under COVID, and they followed policies that we now know weren't real. They told us, you know, you used the term misinformation. They told us this absolutely did not emerge from a lab in Wuhan. And yet now we see the British intelligence knew that it did, that American intelligence suspected that it did. And there's a lot of evidence suggesting that it did emerge. But if you said that it might have, you were cut off. That was malinformation. That wasn't disinformation or misinformation. That was bad. Even if it was true, it was bad for the narrative.
Or an infodemic. That's another thing. We got that cut out, at least, of the the International Health Regulation amendments. But they would cut you off if they felt that this was an infodemic, which means that it could be perfectly true, but it's just too much information. I mean, they will basically another piece of misinformation was that in the beginning, the Chinese Communist Party was saying that there was no human-to-human transmission, and the World Health Organization was just parroting that so that people were not worried about transmitting. And they also said that they had it under control. There's no need to cancel flights from China. So when you pair no human-to-human transmission with don't cancel flights from China, what you get is a situation where China is infecting the entire world. Flights are going out, and there clearly is human-to-human transmission.
Your former hometown of San Francisco, represented by Nancy Pelosi, was actually telling you during the early stages of COVID, go out into the streets and hug people who are visiting from China. Go out and hug them. You look it up. It was in the very, very early days. Oh, no, that's racist. And they were saying to President Trump trying to stop flights. She was telling you to go out and hug people from visiting from China. How fast can you transmit something other than let the planes fly and then tell you to go get in their face and give them a hug? So this is the kind of thing. I think that there is a globalist cabal that really does believe in 15-minute cities and you know, instituting technology over people and isolating people. You mentioned Yuval Noah Harari last night, and he talked about hacking people. Explain that, and then tell us how that is an anti-God movement.
Well, he has, I played a clip of him. So Yuval Noah Harari is basically the brain trust behind
Klaus Schwab, right. World Economic Forum,
and he's the thought leader there. And what he's basically saying is that human beings are hackable animals. And so what does he mean by hackable animals? He also said in another clip that I didn't play last night that COVID was when surveillance went under the skin. So what does that mean? So what he's trying to say is that, you know, human beings are that there will be a time, and it could be pretty shortly, when AI will know you better than you know yourself, because AI is watching your eye movements, you know, what you're looking at, just keeping track of your heart rate, et cetera. So what he also does is he says that human beings have no free will, that because we can be hacked, because they know who we are better than we know who we are ourselves, that they will be able to manipulate us into doing whatever they want us to do, so that the idea of free will is over. And so that's what I was saying in terms of that this is an anti-God, because having free will is absolutely essential to being created by God in His image. God has free will. He has given us free will. And so he doesn't believe in God, and he doesn't believe in free will.
No, and he is, when you listen to him, he talks about massive class of useless people or useless eaters, and he wants to completely control people. This is the World Economic Forum. There are the haves and the have-nots, and it's the same distinction. It's literally what they did in China, where, you know, boys are good and girls are bad, so you don't want to have girls. Here it is, you're in the good class or you're in the bad class. If you embrace technology and you're a good class, I mean, Yuval Noah Harari is literally talking about transhumanism and hacking people. Google's doing it right now, by the way. If you look at Dr. Robert Epstein's work, they are controlling people. If you look at TikTok and the algorithms and how they can manipulate people, that's the sort of thing I think he's talking about.
Yeah, like for Robert Epstein's work, and he talks about how various social media platforms will skew your search history, your searches to only show what they want you to see. So in other words, if you might, during an election, you might say Donald Trump, then they will bring out the worst articles that they can find, like Donald Trump is, I don't know what.
Racist, bigot.
Whatever it is. And if you looked up, you know, Kamala Harris or Hillary Clinton or whatever, it's like Hillary Clinton is nominated for this big prize or whatever, and that's how they manipulate people.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. All right, we're talking with Reggie Littlejohn. She's got incredible work that she's doing. What's the best way to learn about your anti-globalist work?
Go to antiglobalist.net. Antiglobalist.net. So that's one word, anti-globalist. And there you can find our manifesto, and I would encourage you to read that manifesto and sign it, and that will put you on our email newsletter, and we will show you what we're doing around the world to get the world out of the World Health Organization and also to oppose the United Nations and power grab.
All right. The best way to fight back is first get educated. You can learn that from Reggie and at either of her websites that we've talked about. You can read the books. The book Pirate Money is a solution to central bank digital currencies and some of these health passports and digital IDs. If you have questions or comments, reach out to us at afr@piratemoneyradio.com. That's afr@piratemoneyradio.com. And of course, we need to pray. Pray for Reggie Littlejohn and her important work. Pray for America to return to God's principles. And yes, let's get back to business. Let's do it God's way. This is Kevin Freeman and Pirate Money Radio.